So, you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you sure you're ready?
Spin that wheel.
All right, let's do this.
Welcome to the 13th episode of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Lind.
My name is Kayla Moria, and 13 is my favorite number. I have it tattooed on my leg.
Of course it is, and we are a paranormal podcast, which is why we like that number so much. So much fun things are associated with the number 13.
Very true.
How are you doing today, Kayla?
I am exhausted.
Oh, yeah. How is your plethora of homework and studying going?
It's going well, you know. Knocked out a bunch of papers this weekend. Got at least 5 more to write before the end of the semester. But I'm very lucky that the groups I'm in are rad. Like, I always end up with a decent group and a bad group each semester in some way. Mm-hmm. But this semester rocked. I had all great awesome people. So
you got all of the help.
All of the help.
That's nice. Yeah, every time I tried to text you this week, I'm like, hey, we should do this. Hey, what do you think about this? What about this? You just didn't respond. And at one point in time, you're like, I don't have any time. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. I'm just sending you things as I think about them. It's fine. You don't have to respond. It's not important.
And I feel so bad because it's not just you. It's everybody. Like, people are texting me. And I'm like, I don't have time, y'all.
I'll put like a little important or warning message before something if it needs to be done
like ASAP
right away. Otherwise, I'll just send it to you. I'm just throwing it out there. You can respond back whenever you have time. None of it's time sensitive.
I would love to announce this winner, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Yeah, we spun the wheel.
Yeah, we spun the wheel.
All right. So 2 weeks ago, we talked to you all about a contest that we were holding on social media to give away some of our new stickers and mini merch. By mini merch, I mean a variety of stickers and a magnet. So they're not all stickers. And we have finally hit the deadline and we have all of the submissions in and we put them into a random name generator. We spun that wheel and now we have 2 winners. Who are winners?
Winner number 1, Jamie Cahoon.
Jamie Cahoon, congratulations! Woo! Woo!
Winner number 2, Grown Up Camp Kid on Instagram.
Grown Up Camp Kid! Woo! Woo!
So we will contact y'all on social media and get your information so we can mail you these beautiful stickers and magnet.
Perfect. Love it. And thank you everyone who participated in this little giveaway. We were actually kind of surprised at how many people responded and tagged other people that should listen.
It super helps with our social media presence too, because the more interaction we get, the more likely it is our pages will be recommended to other people. So yep. I was just stoked.
Yeah, we're going to have to do something else. I already ordered some coasters, you know, just some little cardboard ones like you see at breweries. But they were having a really great deal online. And I was like, yeah, coasters are great. All my friends drink beer.
We should totally.
Or beverages of it, some kind.
Instead of selling the coasters, though, we should just go to random breweries and just stick them in the stacks with their normal coasters.
I assumed that that's what we were going to do.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We can't sell them. We would sell them for 10 cents.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we could do, like, a 10-cent sale, but I just love the idea of, like, popping in someplace, just being like, just put these, hey, Ray, just put these over here.
Just put them over there. Just, yeah, we'll just go around and put them on the tables of places that we go to, and people will be like, what is this? We'll put a sticker on the back that says, listen every spooky Wednesday.
Exactly.
It'll be perfect.
Now, on that note with the merch, I have been talking to a friend who is a graphic designer about some merch options. And I'm not going to spoil anything because we haven't made any definite decisions. But it did remind me that I haven't told my Ouija board story on the podcast yet, have I? So that's the biggest clue y'all are going to get as to what our potential merch may be, is that it reminded me of a Ouija board story. But I go to comic book conventions and pop culture conventions, and I had gone to one in the Twin Cities a few years ago. And at this toy booth, in this random stack of board games, I found a Ouija board, like a classic Hasbro Ouija board from like the 70s. And it's super cool. It's in its original box. The box is beat up, but the board looks great. And I asked the guy how much it cost because my friend had been looking for a Ouija board and she was there with me. So I was like, you know, you can have this. It's great. And he was like, well, normally things in that pile I charge like $34, but that thing's missing its planchette. So you can have it for $15 because it is kind of a classic. And, you know, the more I sell, because it's the last day of the con, the more I sell, the less I have to bring back to my store. And we're like, sweet, cool. Well, we get it back. We buy it. We get it back and open up the box. And tucked way in the back of the box, there's this, like, pouch area where normally the planchet would be held. Stuffed behind a bunch of, like, paper towel, like really old paper towel, is the planchet.
Oh.
With the glass broken out of it.
Oh, okay.
Which is not a good thing.
No.
So my friend takes it back to her place, and immediately it just gives her bad vibes. She does not like having it in her house. Her partner at the time was, like, not pumped at all. He really hated it. And eventually, like, she rings me up and she's like, you could just take this back. Like, it called to you. You found it. I don't want it.
I don't want it.
Meanwhile, I get it and it makes me so happy. I don't even know why. It just gives me this great feeling to look at it. It's basically just a piece of plywood with a really fancy sticker on it, but it's in such good shape. And I originally was going to burn that planchet. But it's.
Is that what you're supposed to do?
When the glass breaks from everything I'm seeing, yes, there's like a ritual you can follow to burn it.
Okay.
And that could be where the bad vibes that she was feeling were coming from. But it's also a collector's item and I really don't want to burn it. So now I'm just furiously looking up cleansing rituals so that I can use my Ouija board properly without fear of spiritual repercussions.
Yeah, let's avoid the spiritual repercussions. We already open up a lot of things, as our listener commented last week.
So
just from talking about
it. If y'all know of any good recommended cleansing rituals for a Ouija board or anything that you don't know the history on and you're just trying to cover your ass, I would like to do that. Because there's the type of witches that are like super detailed and like they're really safe and everything's all set up. I'm more the, like, wipe the Doritos dust off my hands and, like, all right, bitch, let's do this. So I should probably have some help on this one.
Yeah, I'm certainly, I mean, we've talked about it before. You were really excited when you got this Ouija board and you said that we should use it. And I was like, oh, I don't really mess with Ouija boards. I did one sort of seance thing when I was in middle school. And like a lot of weird things happened that night that I know wasn't my friend whose house I was at because we were together like the entire time. And I've really avoided it ever since. My mom also had some not great experiences with a Ouija board, so I've avoided them my entire life. And if you really want me to do it with you, we're going to have to make sure it's safe.
I got that. I can, you know, I get it. So yes, Ouija boards. That's what I was thinking of. That's what I've had in my head that I wanted to remember to tell for a little bit now. But how was your week?
Very busy. A little bit stressful. But last night, Steve and I got to go to Sacred Heart Music Center, which is a beautiful venue in Duluth. It's an old church that is now a music venue, and it's gorgeous, the sounds when you play and when people sing in there. But a good friend of mine, D, Afro Geode, did her first solo show there, and it was gorgeous. Like, they live streamed it, but also there was a very, very small, masked, socially distanced audience. Steve and I were two of the people in this very small audience, and it was so fantastic. And then I got home afterwards, only to realize that we were locked out of the house.
Ooh.
At like 9:30 at night. Mm. Because my back door has one of those, it's very fancy. It has like a pad, so you like type in a number and that's how it unlocks. Mm-hmm. But then there's this really old lock from like one of the original locks for the house that apparently locked itself. We don't have a key for it. It's super old, but it locked itself behind us when we locked our fancy new lock. And then we couldn't get in because we took for granted the fact that we didn't need keys. Had to get my landlord over here because my downstairs neighbors were gone. I assumed for the entire weekend, had to get my landlord over. He came, tried some keys, didn't find the right key. Had to go all the way back to his house, find more keys, come back, finally got in, and like 15 minutes later, the downstairs neighbor showed up.
I'm sorry, it's not funny, but it's funny.
No, it was annoyingly funny and also annoying. Like, luckily, we had, before we left Sacred Heart, I put in an order for Pizza Luce to deliver to the house. So Steve and I were just sitting in the driveway in the car eating Pizza Luce because we didn't get a chance to eat before the show. And we're just like, all right, well, at least we're not hungry, I guess. I mean, whatever.
We ordered Luce too. Me and you on the same page.
Always on the same page now.
With us.
You know, we weren't like that when we first started, but now that we do this every week, we're just constantly.
Yep, that's what I'm saying.
One thing was really cool, though, because her name is Afro Geode. So when you showed up, there were a variety of stones available to everyone who was in the audience with a list of, like, what the stone properties mean. So I got a little geode that I got to take with me. And I was like, this is the coolest show.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Also, to our listeners, if you have a chance, Afro Geode is on Spotify, and it's amazing. You should really check out her music.
Yep, she only has one song on there right now. She just debuted her second single last night, so that'll be showing up on Spotify sometime in the next week or so. But yeah, she has a beautiful voice. I love it.
All right, well, with that beautiful news, should we get started?
I think we should.
Great.
What do you got for me this week?
This week, Michigan called to me.
Nice.
So I ended up learning some fun facts about the state, especially Grand Rapids.
My story part of it is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's not a concern, because I already said a general idea of what I was doing, but I cannot get over this.
Me and you, we're here.
You and me, yeah, right there.
So Grand Rapids is located in the western section of the Mitten part of Michigan, because there's a UP, and then there's the Mitten. This is in the Mitten. It has a population of 198,401 people, making it the second largest city in Michigan after Detroit. USA Today named the city the craft beverage capital of the United States. And it is also known today as the center of office furniture manufacturing.
Okay.
Just random. That's it. Those are the fun facts I found out about Grand Rapids. Oh, well, that and the fact that the city is, like, super haunted.
Awesome.
That's right. This week, my story is about an entire city. I'm going to talk about...
What?
Grand Rapids.
Oh, that's so awesome. Wow, I've never been so ambitious enough to think to do an entire city.
Well, what it comes from is the fact that there's a lot of haunted locations in the city, but they don't have, compared to a lot of the other things we've covered, they don't have a lot of in-depth history. It's a lot of shorter stories in one city.
Okay.
So Grand Rapids originally became a booming city because of its lumber and railroad industry. And that's kind of where our first story starts. In 1907, the railroad industry led a young couple, Warren and Virginia Randall, to relocate from Detroit and seek a better life in Grand Rapids. They moved to a boarding house that used to be known as the prestigious Judd White Mansion. Once settled in their small one-room rental, Warren began working as a brakeman on the railroad, and Virginia began her life as a stay-at-home wife. She spent her day maintaining their small home, buying groceries, and she took great pride in having a hot meal waiting for Warren when he got home from his long days of hard work. They are described as being truly happy in those early times, but unfortunately that happiness would not last.
It never does.
One summer day in 1908, while working in the rail yard, Warren was involved in a horrific accident that resulted in the loss of his leg.
No.
He got run over by a train.
Ugh.
Despite being fitted with a wooden prosthetic leg, Warren was unable to work and quickly fell into a deep depression. Over time, his mental health continued to decline, and he began to experience anxiety, paranoia, and hallucinations. And he began accusing his wife, Virginia, of having affairs with able-bodied men. Men who, quote, had more legs than he did. Their shouting matches ultimately evolved into violence.
Oh, no.
On several occasions, police were called to the residence by concerned neighbors, but Virginia never pressed charges. The violence started in 1910 when Warren chased her into the streets with a straight razor, threatening to kill her.
What?
He was arrested, but Virginia again did not press charges.
No.
But she did leave him and filed for divorce.
Get it, girl. You deserve so much better than that.
From then on, Warren pursued her relentlessly, begging for forgiveness, promising changes. She ignored him for weeks until one night he somehow managed to convince her to go for a carriage ride, and that carriage ride brought them back to the building where they had their one-room rental.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this building was now abandoned, but they somehow got in and spent time in their old room. That was the last anybody had heard from them.
Okay. So he threatened to kill her. She left him. He went to her new place, wherever she was staying, picked her up in a carriage ride. She finally agreed, okay, we'll have a conversation. The carriage brings them to their old rental place, which is where they were happy and good and fun. Maybe positive memories will, like, bring things back. And then suddenly no one's seen them since?
Yes, that is true. And as I had said, that building was now empty. So there's nobody in there to, like, say anything.
Okay.
And their disappearance went unnoticed for 2 whole weeks until, in the stifling heat and humidity of a Michigan summer, workers from the office building next door called police to investigate a strange odor coming from the house.
Oh, that's never good.
When police broke open the door, which was barricaded, they were overcome by the smell of rotting flesh, and they found the decomposing bodies of Warren and Virginia. It is said that they were so disfigured from decaying in the summer heat that they could only be identified by Warren's wooden leg.
Was this a murder-suicide?
The initial investigation determined that Warren had beaten Virginia to death with his wooden leg and then killed himself with a straight razor, though later, after much more investigating, as Reverend Robert Duchesne, one of the authors of Ghosts of Grand Rapids, reports, it's very possible that Virginia actually passed out and died from alcohol poisoning. And possibly in a fit of guilt, Warren committed suicide, because the later autopsy discovered that the blood found on Virginia's body was actually Warren's blood. This tragic tale spread around the city, and the home remained vacant for over a decade after their deaths. But neighbors complained of hearing violent arguments and a woman's screams and seeing strange lights all from coming inside the building at night. Those who were brave enough to go in or near the house said that they could also hear a strange tap, tap, tap noise from the room where the couple died. And they've attributed that noise to the sound of Randall's prosthetic thumping on the floor.
Oh, dear.
The story continued to be told over the years, and children were warned by parents never to play near the abandoned building until 1924, when the house was demolished, and in its place, Michigan Bell Telephone Company built a 6-story office building. Relieved to have an end to the ghostly sounds and lights emanating from the old house, the nearby residents welcomed the new building for several months. They believed they were finally free of Warren and Virginia Randall's haunting presence.
Good luck.
And then the late night calls began.
Of course they do.
Startled out of sleep, recipients would answer the phone to be met with complete silence on the other end. And this wasn't a few times. It was regularly, to the point where several residents called police to complain. The issue became so troublesome that the police, in an effort to stop what they believed was a prankster that had gotten out of hand, spent several nights tracing the phone lines to find the culprit of the prank calls. But to their confusion, all of the late-night silent lines were traced back to the Michigan Bell Building, and all calls were placed after hours when no one was working inside the building. So the phone calls have mostly stopped because we switched to cell phones and the way that phone lines were operated back in the 20s versus how they've continued to operate. You know, you don't get reports of them anymore. Mm-hmm. But that building is still there. So who knows what people experience. I tried to do a little bit more digging, but it kind of stopped. Reports kind of stopped after a certain point. Basically, we got to these calls, and then the hauntings were done. So who knows? Okay. It is possible. Maybe the spirits moved on.
Well, yeah, hauntings don't always last for forever.
Exactly. The second location is the Holmdene Manor at Aquinas College, which is a small Roman Catholic liberal arts college in the city. The 103-year-old Tudor-style mansion that now houses Aquinas College administrations and faculty was built by the Edward Lowe family in 1908 on the site of an old dairy farm. The Lowes were socially prominent in early Grand Rapids society, even hosted President Theodore Roosevelt overnight once in 1911. And the manor was home to the Lowe family until 1939, when the estate was sold to the University of Grand Rapids. And it was sold in 1945 to the Dominican Sisters of Grand Rapids. And then in 1980, it was given a well-earned status as a historic landmark by the Grand Rapids Historic Preservation Commission. Since the 80s, when it was given its status, that's when the hauntings began to be reported at this location.
And that was when it was what?
The administrations for the Aquinas College.
Okay.
Because of its long history, many Grand Rapids residents are aware of the legends surrounding the manor. According to the legends, a boy drowned in the pond on the estate, and now he haunts the property. Many say it was one of the sons in the Lowe family, but the Ghost of Grand Rapids book that I mentioned earlier actually did a little debunking of that. They researched the deaths in the Lowe family and found that none of the children actually died on the property. Their youngest child, who is believed to be the center of the hauntings, actually died in San Francisco at age 65.
Oh.
So the authors were not able to prove that any of the Lowe children died on the property, but they could not find any proof that servants' children didn't. And there were servants that had families stay on the property with them.
Right. And if a servant's child drowned, it's not as if it's going to make the local papers.
Yep. One story by Brian Duchesne, the author of The Ghost of Grand Rapids, claimed that a professor in 2003 wouldn't visit the manor alone anymore. She claimed that when she was alone, she would hear children giggling. And it's reported that this is a common occurrence and is believed to be the energy of the Lowe children. They also detail experiences of a safety officer named Dan, who said one night after leaving the manor during his rounds, he was 100 feet away and turned back, noticing all the lights that he had shut off on the third floor were back on. For years, security and housekeeping staff have claimed to have odd experiences, reporting phantom elevator rides, doors that slam, knobs that rattle, lights that work on and off on their own, and apparitions of children, especially in the windows of the attic.
Interesting.
So, it is believed that these apparitions could not be like ghosts or hauntings because of death, but just the general energy of the Lowe children because they were so happy in the home.
Yeah, similar to the residual hauntings that we were talking about when I covered the Stanley Hotel.
Yes. And also kind of like we talked about lighthouse hauntings, how lighthouse keepers have a happy life and they do repetitive stuff every day, so they could just be their energy carrying over too.
Yeah.
A third location is actually an entire neighborhood in the town. The oldest neighborhood in Grand Rapids holds many secrets. TV shows, books, paranormal experts, and even exorcisms have all taken place to explore and even rid homes near Fulton Street of their spirits. The neighborhood is called Heritage Hill. The neighborhood is filled with large Victorian-style homes, many of which were built in the 1800s. Residents report waking up with nightmares, sounds in the night, doors opening on their own, beds shaking them awake, and things moving around the house at night. Most addresses and information are actually withheld because obviously it's people's homes. But this is reported from several residents of the neighborhood. One specific man, Chris Gibbons, in 2004 started experiencing things in their home that didn't make sense. At night, something would shake the bed where he and his wife were sleeping, or he would feel something pushing on his pillow.
Oh, I don't like that either. Both those sound really dreadful.
He would have plastic hanging in the rooms he was renovating on the house, and they would rustle and move even though there were no windows open and nobody in the room to move them. They started to seriously wonder if they had a ghost in the house, and then apparently more things came forward about other residents experiencing several things. Eventually, the disturbances became increasingly more serious when his wife said she was attacked in the basement by the ghost.
No.
Chris Gibbons finally wrote a book on the subject called Trespass, which you can buy online, detailing all of his experience, and the Destination America TV series A Haunting featured his home in one of their episodes.
Really?
So those are three of the most well-known hauntings in Grand Rapids, but there are additional locations, such as the Grand Rapids Public Library, which is said to be haunted by Samuel Rank, a World War I wartime librarian who later became the director of the Grand Rapids Library. He can be seen in the library dressed in a dark green military uniform, often cataloging material.
Oh, for some reason that just warms my heart. I don't know why.
The Findlay Cemetery, just 10 miles out of Grand Rapids, is said to be haunted by the spirit of an 1800s woman clothed in white and surrounded by a blue mist. They believe her to be Sarah McMillan. The woman was allegedly killed by her jealous husband before he then killed her lover and then died himself. Those who visit her grave have seen the lady in white and hear men fighting in the background.
Ooh.
They found her stone set towards the back near the woods, and it is broken in half, held up by posts, and surrounded by coins and trinkets from visitors. But three different sites said it is ill-advised to ask her for candy on Halloween, and then they gave no further information past that. So don't ask the ghost for candy. I don't know why you would do that anyway, but don't do it.
Yeah, that's really, it's an odd statement without any context.
And Sanford's Folly, a building at 540 Cherry Street in Grand Rapids, Samuel Ransom Sanford designed and built the house over a century ago as a love nest for him and his mistress, but his mistress died before she could move in. And then the house remained deserted for years before a tormented Civil War veteran purchased the house and then also died in the house. Don't worry, though, on this one. The last reported haunting was in 1923, and the house has been well-behaved for almost 100 years now, showing us that hopefully the spirits have been able to move on. So overall, the city seems to really embrace its haunting history. I found a bunch of links for haunted walking tours that apparently go all year round, not just during Halloween.
That's awesome.
So I've known places that do haunted walking tours, pretty well-known places, places in Los Angeles, New Orleans. I think there's maybe even some in like the New York area, but I'm not sure. But this is the first Midwestern city I've seen that's just like, yeah, we haunt it as fuck and we own it.
I love that. Yeah, my sister went on one in Georgia and she said it was fascinating, but it would be really nice to be able to go to one in the Midwest. I know that once upon a time, a local company called the Duluth Experience did a haunted bus tour, which I never got a chance to go on, but...
Yeah, and Grand Rapids isn't that far. It's only like a 9-hour drive.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. I don't know the miles. I just know hours because I'm Minnesotan.
That's how we measure time. And distance is in time.
So that's my story of Grand Rapids, Michigan, haunted as fuck.
I loved that. And I like that you did something different enough to do an entire town rather than just a singular location.
Full disclosure to our listeners, I have been so packed this week that... I've found a bunch of smaller stories before, and we've talked about bringing them in on like a episode full of mini stories at one point. So a lot of these things I would have normally saved for that, but this week I just was like, no, we're talking about the whole town. I found this. I'm dedicated to it. I don't have time to do anything else.
No, 100%. 100%. No, I liked it. I mean, really, as long as I like it, isn't that all that matters?
You know it, girl.
So my story this week... So as I mentioned at the top of the episode, this is the 13th episode of Left of Skeptic. And in honor of the 13th episode, I'm doing a cursed object.
Yes.
Okay, so submitted for the approval of the Left of Skeptic Society, this is the tale of the Hands Resist Him.
I loved that show.
It was so good. And they just came out with a new season, I think at the end of 2020, and I haven't watched any of it yet, but I've been thinking a lot about Are You Afraid of the Dark?
I'm ready.
So that was my homage to Are You Afraid of the Dark? I hope you enjoyed it. All right, so do you know about the Hands Resist Him?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I couldn't remember if I was talking to you recently about this or someone else, though most likely it was you, so I figured you knew. But I'm going to tell you a little bit more in depth than maybe you know, because I didn't know about this information either. I just went on a search to find something that was a cursed object that had a Midwest connection.
All right.
All right. The Hands Resist Him, most recently known as the Haunted eBay painting, is the name of a painting by an artist named William Stoneham. And in the early 1970s in Southern California, William Stoneham had been in contract to paint two paintings a month for about $200 each. And one month in 1972, he was really struggling for inspiration. So he turned to a poem that his first wife, Roseanne Ponsetti, wrote about her then husband William and his experience with being adopted and never knowing his biological siblings. The poem goes, "He is of the seeing visions. His strokes reveal them in a rush of color, of madness, of mystics. And his head is the highest center. It must confront its enemy. The hands resist him like the secret of his birth. His presence is the sanctum heartbeat, felt in the darkness and in passion. Its sound, the sole gift of that silence."
I'm going to assume that's beautiful, but I'm really not good with poetry.
I'm not really good with poetry either, which is why I think I said it terribly also. I'm like, I don't know how to read this.
We need one of our poet friends to, like, come help us with something
to say
this.
It beautifully. Yep. Yeah. All I think of is, like, Leslie Knope from Parks and Rec going, "Anything can be a slam poem if you say it like this." But I assumed that that's not how she wrote it. So
probably.
"He is the seeing visions. His strokes reveal them in a rush of color, of madness, of mystics."
I'm going to need you to stop that now.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, thanks.
I'm not going to do the whole poem that way. I'm probably just going to cut that out. So with this poem as inspiration, as well as an actual photo of himself that his parents had taken when he was about 5 years old with a little neighbor girl, Stoneham painted The Hands Resist Him. The painting shows a little boy, the five-year-old William Stoneham, standing in front of a paned glass door. Next to him is a life-size doll of a little girl with sunken or missing eyes and an exaggerated frown, like maybe a marionette puppet or like a dummy that can talk. It appears that the edges of her mouth go down to her chin, and she's holding a cylinder in her hands with a bunch of wires. And I read somewhere that this is actually supposed to be a piece of herself, so I guess she's more of a robot than a doll.
Okay.
And behind young William and the doll robot, in the darkness of the paned glass window, you can see a bunch of disembodied hands.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of the painting.
And a lot of the articles ask, do people think it's creepy because it's the haunted eBay painting, or is it because it's genuinely creepy? And I personally think it's legitimately creepy. I don't know. Maybe I just have some weird aversion to disembodied hands.
I would say that if I saw that in a gallery, I wouldn't say that it screams haunted, but it would unnerve me.
Yeah, that's my thoughts as well. I don't think it's just because it's the haunted eBay painting. I think it's an unnerving photo. Mm-hmm. So in 1974, The Hands Resist Him was put on display at the Fine Garden Gallery in Beverly Hills, California, where it was reviewed by an art critic from the Los Angeles Times named Henry Seldes, and eventually was purchased by John Marley, who you might know as Jack Waltz in The Godfather, aka the guy who woke up with a horse head in his bed.
I've never seen it.
I haven't either, but I do know that reference.
Okay.
And so it begins. Within a few years, both the art critic as well as the gallery owner had died. Seldes died in 1978, and Feingartner died in 1981. And then in 1984, the painting's owner, John Marley, also died. But before he passed away, Mr. Marley had reportedly sold the painting. But who he sold it to and where it has been since is a complete mystery. And the next time that we hear about The Hands Resist Him is in February of 2000 when it shows up on eBay.
Oh.
The story goes that around this time, a California couple found the painting behind an old brewery. Quote, "At the time, we wondered a little why a seemingly perfectly fine painting would be discarded like that." And then in parentheses, "Today we don't!" exclamation point. The couple took the painting home and hung it in the bedroom of their 4-year-old daughter.
No, yeah, why, of course.
I have no idea. It's not creepy at all. Within a few days, their daughter was terrified of the painting, saying that at night, the little girl and little boy would fight with each other, and that the little girl would threaten the boy with the object in her hand. And also that the children would, quote, leave the painting as ghosts and continue their fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother, not one to believe in the paranormal, told her that it was just a painting. And her father was a little bit sus about the whole situation, but also wanted to prove that it was, in fact, just a painting. So he set up a motion detector camera in the room. And over the course of 3 days and three nights, they filmed the painting.
I'll take people that have nothing better to do for $500, Alex.
I also think it's weird. It's like you waited 3 days and three nights to review the footage. Meanwhile, their daughter is like freaking out because she thinks that the people in the painting are coming to life. They're like, nah, we'll check it. We'll check it on Tuesday. It's fine. We'll just let it marinate in there for a while. According to their eBay tale via somethingwicked.com, they claimed that the camera captured several photos of the painting, quote, almost taking on a life of its own, with the colors changing, the object in the doll's hand taking on the, quote, resemblance of a gun or another weapon instead of the dry cell batteries and wires, which is what she was painted holding, and that the boy, quote, seemingly exiting the painting under threat.
Nah, I don't like that at all.
Super fun.
Ugh.
So this little robot girl in the painting is apparently holding a dry cell battery and wires. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it somehow, over the course of the night, transforms into a gun or another weapon. And then she's threatening the little boy in the painting. And then he crawls out of the painting to get away from her.
That's pleasant.
Super fun. Super fun. Quote, after seeing the boy seemingly exit the painting under threat, we decided the painting has to go. Please judge for yourself, but before you do, please read the following warning and disclaimer. And the disclaimer on the eBay listing said, warning, do not bid on this painting if you are susceptible to stress-related disease, or if you are faint of heart or unfamiliar with supernatural events. By bidding on this painting, you agree to release the owners of all liability in relation to the sale or any events happening after the sale that might be contributed to this painting.
Fuck off. You found it by a dumpster. Just burn it. Don't, like, try to force some other unfortunate family to deal with it.
This painting may or may not possess supernatural powers that could impact or change your life. However, by bidding, you agree to exclusively bid on the value of the artwork with disregard to the last two photos featured in this auction and hold the owners harmless in regards to them and their impact expressed or implied. And then there appears to be an addition to this disclaimer that was added a little bit later, so it continues. Now that we got this out of the way, one question to you eBay buyers. We want our house to be blessed after the painting is gone. Does anyone know who is qualified to do that? The size of the painting is 24 by 36 inches, so it's rather large. And as I've had several questions, here are the following answers. There is no odor left behind in the room. There were no voices or the smell of gunpowder, no food prints or strange fluids on the wall. To deter questions in this direction, there are no ghosts in this world, no supernatural powers. This is just a painting, and these things have an explanation. In this case, probably a fluke light effect. I encourage you to bid on the artwork and consider the last two paragraphs as pure entertainment, and please do not take them into consideration when bidding. As we think it is still a good idea to bless any house, we still welcome input into that procedure.
So let me get this clear. I gave you three paragraph disclaimer telling you about how terrible this object is.
Uh-huh.
And then I explain that I don't want to be held liable for anything shitty that's going to happen to you after you buy this painting.
Which you have to do on eBay and Etsy anyway.
Which you have to do. But then nothing supernatural really exists. This all has an explanation. I just don't know it. And by the way, do you know anybody that can bless my house?
Because all houses should be blessed, so.
Because also, I was the dumbass that put this in my 4-year-old's room.
Because I found it discarded by a dumpster.
Behind a brewery. And put it in my 4-year-old's room.
Yep.
All right. Just making sure I'm all caught up on how this story went. Seems like I am. So these are great people.
Yep. This is a great synopsis also. Thank you. So this blew up all over the internet. It was shared across a bunch of different platforms, including Facebook and Reddit. In fact, by the time the auction was done, it had been viewed by over 30,000 people.
Wow.
And in addition to it being seen and shared, people also started to feel the effects of the painting. Per somethingwicked.com, some reports that they had, quote, experienced strange events just looking at the painting on their computers, and throughout the eBay auction, the painting, quote, still affects those who view it, and people feel ill and have even fainted or had unpleasant experiences. Children seem to be the most affected and have, quote, vivid nightmares the night after seeing it and wake up screaming. And some reportedly claim that children who saw the painting ran away screaming or were freaked out, while others said that they had been touched by an invisible force. One person who tried to print the image actually had a printer malfunction, and apparently it was like a brand new printer.
Oh, yeah.
It was reported that one individual heard, quote, an exorcist-type voice along with a blast of hot air. And another said that he, quote, became very ill viewing the painting and had to burn white sage to cleanse his house after. Well, another claimed to have experienced, quote, blackout / mind control experiences.
Okay.
Yep. Eventually, the painting, which was originally listed at $199, sold for $1,025 to Kim Smith, the owner of the Perceptions Gallery in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Ha! Nice.
She doesn't seem to have experienced anything out of the ordinary herself, other than the weird emails from other people with thoughts and prayers, quotes from the Bible, and, quote, advice as to how to cleanse my residence from the evil thing from a Native American shaman in Mississippi.
Well, yeah, because we all know how much thoughts and prayers do.
All those thoughts and prayers. So nice. But she did track down William Stoneham, the painter of The Hands Resist Him, via a label that she found on the back of the painting, and he had no idea that his painting had become an internet sensation. When he had painted it, inspired by both the poem from his first wife as well as the photo of himself as a little boy, the meaning behind the painting was anything but sinister. According to William Stoneham's website, stonehamstudio.com, the imagery is inspired by what psychiatrist and psychoanalyst Carl Jung described as the collective unconscious. He said that artists, especially visual artists, are barometers for the currents that run through this collective, and that dreams are the most common experience that people may have with this. And it's in these dreams that you will find memories of a place and the echoes of all the life that has been or could have been. The hands in the painting are all of the other lives or possibilities that you didn't experience. The glass door is the thin veil between the waking and the dreaming, and the girl / doll / robot is the imagined companion to guide you through this realm.
Okay. I like that explanation. It makes more sense than the poem to me.
Yeah. That's not exactly how he worded it. He worded it very artsy, and that's my interpretation of what he said. So I could be incorrect in some of that, but that's the gist of it.
Nice.
And then our dear old friend, Zach Baggins, heard the story of The Hands Resist Him and contacted William Stoneham and commissioned a sequel in 2004 called Resistance at the Threshold, which depicts the same characters more than 40 years later and in the same style as the original. William also painted what appears to be yet an older version of himself with the little girl doll in 2012 called Threshold of Revelation. And then in 2017, Baggins commissioned a prequel to the original called The Hands Invent Him, in which Stoneham depicts himself as a little boy again, but now behind the original painting's door and holding a paintbrush, among other visual elements. And this painting now hangs in Zach Baggins' Haunted Museum in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I just looked them all up. I like his art style.
It's nice.
So this is one thing that Zach Baggins did right.
Yeah, he commissioned him to continue to be an artist.
There you go. Pay an artist for their work. I'm all about it.
Exactly. And apparently, William Stoneham actually stopped doing art for many decades until, I think, Zach Baggins commissioned him. And then he started being an artist again.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. So the original painting still resides in storage at the Perceptions Gallery in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And according to DailyDot.com, Kim Smith, the owner of the gallery, has only been asked to show the painting 6 times. One of the most memorable occasions was in 2007 when a dozen men, ranging from the ages of 16 to 60, came in to see it. And she said that 20 seconds passed and just silence. And then someone said, "That's creepy."
Good. Good. I like it. You know? First of all, this is the first thing that I'm stoked that Zach Bagans did. I'm happy that he paid an artist for their work. But also, he should probably pay to buy the painting from that woman who just paid over $1,000 for a painting that was found behind a brewery. Have you ever been behind a brewery? It's gross.
Well, so Smith recently received a low six-figure offer for the painting but turned it down.
Oh, okay.
She said, "Nothing has ever been to the point where I considered it seriously. It's got its own mystique that's going on here." And then the Daily Dot also said that in March of 2020, documentary filmmaker Greg Gibbs was in Grand Rapids filming a documentary on the history of the painting, and a feature film by director Darren Kyle O'Neill is also in the works, though the state of this project is unclear. Although, obviously, this was about the time that the pandemic hit the U.S., mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure whether or not these things are still actively going on. Mm-hmm. But to this day, the painting continues to inspire fear and discomfort. One Redditor by the name of Jupin Knight wrote, "I still refuse to look at it / study this picture for more than 5 seconds. It creeps me the fuck out." And then another one named Snoos My Dog added, "I actually purchased a print of this painting from his website. I put it on display in my living room, and man, that thing made everyone who saw it uncomfortable. People would actually stop coming over because of it. I ended up taking it down due to popular demand, and now it's under a cloth in my jam pad."
My jam pad?
Yeah, jam pad.
I don't know what that means, but okay. I'm guessing, is it like the boys have their jam space? Is jam pad like fancy terms for jam space?
I believe so.
Okay.
That's what I got from it. So it's hidden under a cloth in my jam pad. And that, my friends, is the story of the haunted eBay painting, The Hands Resist Him.
So that story gave me more skeptic than left of skeptic vibes. It feels very, did you ever watch The Ring?
Yeah.
Painting feels very, if you look at this painting too long, aka if you watch this VHS tape, you'll get really sad or depressed or die, or you will get a phone call that says you will die in 7 days. Like, it feels very much like that. When really, the guy that painted it was like, "I just liked the poem that she wrote, so I made this painting with the poem that she wrote. An art is subjective. And y'all are taking this too seriously. Also, you just paid $1,000 for something found behind a dumpster. Or behind a brewery. So I assume it's by a dumpster."
Yeah.
So, Left of Skeptic, a paranormal podcast centered on the Midwest, was almost entirely centered on Grand Rapids, Michigan this week. And that was pretty cool.
Yep. So there's another Grand Rapids story. Now there's a haunted painting there.
Yep. I can't wait to upload the episode map, because I'll use her gallery as the point for your story, and then it'll just be a bunch of little colored dots right in one area. Pretty sweet. So if you're a listener in Grand Rapids, go check out all these places we talked about. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's interesting that she's only brought it out 6 times since 2000.
Well, any internet sensation, it gets a bunch of things built up about it, but nobody's actually going to do anything.
Okay, well, if we go to Grand Rapids, we should contact her and be like, "Hi."
After just researching Grand Rapids for a while, I'm going to tell you there's nothing else for us to do. But yeah, let's go to Michigan.
Okay, let's do it.
So we're changing it up a bit again this week, and I understand that you are reading a listener story for me.
I am. I do have a listener story for you this week.
Yay!
All right, so this one was sent anonymously. And they are using they, them pronouns.
Okay.
And it goes as such. "I work in a darkroom for a good portion of my day. And just to be clear off the bat, there is no historical reason why there would be ghosts in this location, though there has been some fear of layoffs and some toxic work environment situations on and off for a good while. So the general energy around here is negative for sure.
Okay.
Several of us, as far as I know, all female employees, have talked about strange things that have happened to us. We work in the light together, but when we do our darkroom chemistry, we open a big, heavy, loud door, ring a bell, and walk through a dark hallway to individual dark rooms where we are often alone for hours. It's pretty clear from the loud bell and the heavy doors when someone is even in the hallway, let alone entering your room. The most common thing that happens is messing with the lights. So there are three colors of lights and they're all on separate switches. One day I was working in red light when all of a sudden the green lights switched on by themselves. The switch itself was also turned on, which was fine for the experiment, but creepy to me. I have also had the green lights fully turned off for a few seconds while none of the other equipment in the room has been affected by any outages. For the most part, we work in very, very dim green light. If you have previously worked in a photography developing red light room, that is practically daylight compared to the green light. Once I was working and all of a sudden it felt like someone grabbed my shoulder for a few seconds, which was terrifying. Luckily, this has only happened to me once. But what's weird is that when I'm feeling creeped out in there, I'm always seem to be weary of the same area. For some reason, I don't like to have my back towards it. Other people have had their samples disappear, only to have them return to the same place where they were originally taken from a few days later with no one knowing where they went or why they were missing. Not that long ago, one person left an offering of candy after a string of bad and messed up tests, and I honestly don't think that I've had anything bad happen ever since then.
Maybe it's the trolls from the Devil's Punch Bowl.
They're in dark rooms now.
Yep, exactly. There you go.
So they also included a little note just in case you're curious. The different lights. The silver film that we work with is sensitive to different light depending on what you do with it. On its own, red lights are safe. However, to make it more reactive and work better in our system, sometimes we add a dye that can only be used when working under very dim green lights.
Okay.
Fun science fact.
So, first of all, I love that story. It's a good story. I enjoyed it. Dark rooms freak me out. And you actually did photography.
I did, yeah.
So, I just imagine, like, in my brain, I know that this is a listener, but I don't know this listener. It's anonymous and they use they pronouns. But in my brain, I'm picturing you doing all of this stuff and just getting freaked out because I've seen your photography because we live together.
Right.
And I'm just like, man, I don't know how people do that. I would get naturally freaked out anyway.
Dark rooms can be kind of scary. When I was in college, I actually was the assistant for the photography department. And so I was the person who mixed the different chemicals. And I was often found myself there at like 2 o'clock in the morning by myself because I had to go to work first. Then I would come in and I would do my photo work as well as my actual projects because it's low light. The corners are really dark, and sometimes if something makes a sound, you're like, what was that? And then you look around and you can't see everything clearly. I've seen some instances of this, but yeah, like this person said that the red light from the photo developing room is basically like sunlight. They have to use, when they use the green light, it's just super, super dim. And so you cannot see anything at all. And I think it's interesting that there's a specific spot in the room that they find very worrisome compared to like just in general not feeling great. Like, what's in that spot?
Yep. Don't like it at all. I mean, I like the story, but I don't like the situation at all.
No, I never want to be in the dark, especially for your job.
Yeah.
You have to keep going in there. That sucks.
Yeah, that would be terrible. Well, if you have a listener story you would like to submit, you can email us leftofskeptic@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns and your name or let us know if you would like to remain anonymous. You can also submit your listener stories on our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, where you can click the listener story tab. You can also see our references for past episodes, find links for previous episodes, or view our episode map to see where all of the episodes have occurred.
You can also find us on social media on Instagram and Twitter at Left of Skeptic or on Facebook at Left of Skeptic Podcast.
If you have the opportunity or the chance, if you could smash that subscribe button. I hate that phrase, but people say it all the time. Basically, subscribe if you can. Or if you have access to Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star rating. We appreciate it, and it helps us get recommended to other listeners.
And of course, if you like our episodes, you can always tell your friends.
Please.
A lot of our listeners are based upon the people who've listened before them, and they're like, hey, I think you'd like this. Check it out. And as I said last time, the first couple episodes are rough. I actually recently went back and listened to them.
I told you.
Like, what sort of editing was I even doing? None, apparently. What?
Hey, we've just been getting better and better.
But that's just it. So we do get better over time. And so if you do have a favorite episode, maybe point them in that direction. I have some favorite episodes. I'm constantly like, maybe you should listen to this one first.
Yep. Well, with that, we thank you for joining us this week, and we will see you next Spooky Wednesday.
Next Spooky Wednesday.
Okay, bye.